And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. And now, every fourth Monday from 3 to 4, it is Christian Marison Technology Talk. I love this. And we still have Al Fulton, Net One Services, Breakthrough Networking, joining us. This is so exciting.
Wow. I'm looking forward to it.
This is really cool.
It's going to be a good show.
Yes. I love the topics you have, especially this James Bond type of... What? Some gadgets that you're talking about.
Really cool gadgets.
You called it cool gadgets.
Cool gadgets that we should be seeing this year. Because we're in January, we're going to talk a little bit what kind of predictions we're going to see this year in terms of technology and trends. It's going to be a very cool show. But
the big question.
Yes.
Did you see Blue Valentine, the movie?
I did not.
I saw it last night, and it was Michelle Williams and Ryan Gosling. And I thought, at the end, the credits said they're co-executive producers. And I thought, I wonder if they're really going out, you know. And they're going out. He dropped Rachel McAdams. I don't know if he dropped her, but he used to go out with Rachel McAdams, remember? Notebook?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, for Michelle. Now Michelle Williams.
I totally forgot about The Notebook.
Yeah.
It's been a while.
Yeah, that was a good movie. All right, I don't know why I brought that up, but... I thought it was a pretty good movie, Blue Valentine.
Okay, I'll check it out.
All right, there we go. So, what do we got?
Well, since last time we met, Dave, you bought an iPad, right?
I did. I have this iPad here. I even know how to use it.
Well, how is it? Do you like it?
Tremendous. I got to tell you. I'll tell you what I like about it, should I?
Go ahead.
Compact, easy to bring, battery life ridiculous. It could go like 10 hours, I think. Standby is a lot more than that. It boots up like instantly, and I can do tax research on it. I can get anywhere on the internet. I downloaded for only like $9 or something an application called Pages, which converts Word programs back and forth. And then a thing called Numbers, which works with Excel, and then Notability, which is a note program where I can write with my finger on the touchscreen, and it makes it great for the radio. It makes it great when I'm in the media for, like, tonight, the Coyotes I'm going, and other sporting events to write articles, to keep notes, so I can comment on the radio show. Phenomenal, phenomenal iPad.
Well, actually, you hit all the right notes because I've never heard one person complain about the iPad.
Really?
Not one.
It's good. Al has an iPad right there.
I do. I'm using it. I'm watching the trailer for Blue Valentine.
Really?
Yes.
Which scene, though? That's the real question.
I just finished it.
And there's a scene in particular you definitely want to watch.
Oh, it's just a trailer.
Okay, darn. Okay. Anyway, back to Christmas.
And I see you got a keyboard with it, so you definitely went the whole nine yards.
Yeah, I did. I went to the Apple store.
Okay.
And I also bought an iPhone 5 at the same time because I had an i3. And I figured, I could probably maybe get a little discount, but hey, I'm here. Let them hook everything up. Save me, some time, and they did.
Cool. Well, the tablets have really been a game changer, and they've been one of the catalysts that have recently pushed this idea of ultrabooks around. Mm. And I just bought an ultrabook a few weeks ago that you have just seen.
And it looks pretty nice, too.
Exactly. I get a lot of questions about this because it's a new product. They've just... what came up with it last year with the idea of an ultrabook.
Yep.
And it's a new product, so I get a lot of people that ask me, what is it and how is it different than a laptop? And what they are, they're premium laptops that are light, portable, and high performance. Oh. So they sort of combine all the good things about a laptop but make it smaller so that you can pick it up and carry it around. It's not a tablet, so people shouldn't confuse it. There are convertible ultrabooks, which sort of convert into a tablet-like device.
But is like an iPad.
Exactly.
A tablet,
exactly.
Yeah.
It's like an iPad. But it comes with a full operating system. It comes with Windows 8, so you can install all your software on there that you would need, like, I don't know, QuickBooks or Microsoft Office or stuff like that. But that's what they are. They're light laptops. They're a bit premium. They cost a bit more, but they're very, very light. I mean, you picked it up. You saw it's quite light.
I did three curls with it.
Now, the biggest feature, the nicest feature I like that distinguishes the laptop from a tablet is the Ultrabook is the touch screen. So it's it acts as though it's.
Do you have a touch screen?
Yeah,
oh, you do.
Yeah, so you can utilize Windows 8 operating system fully, whereas a standard laptop, the screen is not tactile, so you must use a mouse and a keyboard. That Ultrabook is the technology is very nice.
That is nice, and so if someone asked you right now, and if let's say some listeners are not exactly sure, they hear these terms Ultrabook or a tablet or iPad. What would you tell them if they said, let's say the question was, which one should I get? You would say?
I'd say an iPad.
Yeah?
I would say
over
an
Ultrabook? Or would you say, like, well, what are you going to use it for, perhaps, right?
I would, yes. It's distinctly different uses. And,
yeah.
But they do cross over, and that's what Christian, he's shaking his head. An iPad, I do agree that iPad's very universal.
You can,
as long as everything is in the cloud, Intuit has QuickBooks in the cloud, and there's FreshBooks, there's other sites. You can use an iPad or Ultrabook, but when it comes to running applications on the local device, you typically need a operating system that can run those devices, and that's where the Ultrabook comes in.
Correct. What happens is a lot of people do have, at this point, PCs that they use in their daily lives or existing laptops. So I recommend an iPad in that case. If you already have something to rely on, should you need a computer, like you have a laptop that you use, Dave, it might not be, a recent model, but you still rely on it. It still works. So
In
your case, an iPad just came out perfect.
It was absolutely perfect. No question about it. So there's a lot of choice out there now, but also you got to know what you're doing, what you want it for. In fact, probably my next purchase will be an Ultrabook as well, because I still need full access of a computer.
Exactly. And there are a wide range of Ultrabooks available. They start at about $600 to $700 on the low end. You don't get touchscreen at those prices, but they are fairly light. And, I mean, they're okay. I'm not going to say that they're great, but they're okay. They're not bad.
Yeah.
The one I bought is about a mid-range. It costs $850. It's a Series 5 Samsung, and it has touchscreen. But the really nice ones come about $1,000, $1,100, and they're very light, very fast, and they look really good. So it's a matter of preference, but at the same time, it's a matter of budget.
Yeah, and that makes sense. But people these days, I mean, most people need something. Hopefully they have a computer, right? Those days, there's still a lot of people that, right? They're afraid of computers, I suspect. You probably see that all the time, both of you.
I do, and they start with a smartphone, then they learn the availability of the internet, the access to their contacts, their calendar, their email, that introduces them to it, and then they graduate to an iPad or a tablet where they can actually view videos, like I was viewing the trailer, so it's a multi-purpose tool. And then once they determine that they can utilize this information on a business level, then that's where the Ultrabook comes in. Now, something that I wanted to add regarding the Ultrabook and the new technology is the solid-state hard drive, that it does not have a spinning component, so it is not susceptible to movement, jars, jolts, dropping, because a solid state does not have any spinning parts, so it runs cooler. It doesn't run or wear out like a spinning hard drive would, so you don't have the typical crashes, bumping it. That technology is it's again doubling every year, so it went from 16 gigs to 32 to 64, 128, 256. So they're up to just about it's costly, but they're up to about a terabyte for small drives, so you can store quite a bit of information on those devices now.
What I want to end the Ultrabook discussion on, a lot of people ask about Apple. Well, what about Apple? Should I buy an Apple? Should I not buy an Apple? And you asked me the same question, Dave.
Yeah.
Well, an Apple, for example, the MacBook Air, it's a very thin, light laptop, and it's very small and portable. That is an Ultrabook, the same type of device. It starts about $1,100, but the $1,100 edition is very small. So you're looking at about $1,400, I believe, for the 13-inch version. But they are Ultrabooks, and they also have the regular laptops, you know, the MacBook Pros. It's a matter of preference, whichever way you want to go with it. It's Apple products are generally more expensive, so if you have the money and you really like the products, go for an Apple. But there are alternatives in the Windows part that are cheaper, and they do the exact same thing.
Now, what I've heard people go for Apple, probably for many reasons. The one I've heard, and maybe this is true or not, that they think it's more reliable, that the fewer viruses, less crashes. But you guys are the experts. Is that true or is it a myth? Who wants to answer?
Not in the crashes section, I would say. I mean, they do have less viruses than Windows, but at the same time, Windows has a virus protection software that you can install. But for me personally, honestly, I mean, they use the same parts they buy from China and Taiwan, and it's the same processors from Intel. So I wouldn't say that inside it's, you know, magic. It's still computer parts they buy from LG and Samsung and Sony so far and so on.
But the operating system's different?
The operating system, people say it's better than Windows. I've never tried it, so in that respect, I can't really say anything.
Al, how about you?
Personal experience and also from clients' reports. And the Windows typically will have an issue more frequently than Apple. I won't give examples, but yes, the blue screen and purple screens and black screens that Windows will produce. And versus Apple, it is very reliable, and I hear very few complaints about any issues.
So I guess the question, is it worth, you know, extra money to avoid those issues? Depends, I guess. It depends on your own budget, cash flow.
True, and the application as well. Apple's known for its graphics and speed of processing, and it's very popular in that industry. Mm. Whereas in the business or accounting, it is not as popular.
That's true.
I believe it's if you take a scale from or even percentage, Apple has 10% of the laptop market. Microsoft has 90. Mm. That's of the PC or laptop. Where you take it, you know, flip it, and you go to cell phones. Windows has only 10% of the market share. Apple has between Apple and Android. And they have Android. There's 139 million Android phones sold last year. There were 40 million Apple iPhones and only about 10 million Windows-based phones.
Wow. Quite a difference.
Quite.
And I remember long ago, well, Macintosh, that was my first computer, and we're talking long ago. However, it was even great, you know, even after the horse and buggy. You're probably wondering, come on, Dave, you were in that generation. But I had the Macintosh.
Chariots.
Yeah, Chariots.
Yes.
Yeah, that's right, Ben-Hur. I remember Ben-Hur.
Chariots.
And so what was interesting is that it was a great computer because there was no such things as Windows back then. But, of course, Apple had the Windows design. But Microsoft wasn't even around back then. And the problem is, you hit it right on the head. There was no really great accounting software. And as a CPA, what could I do, right? I mean, I had to go to the PC, and I did. But I really didn't like it all that much back in the day. I mean, it would just freeze up and crash, and it was a nightmare.
I'm cracking up over here because Moses actually had two tablets.
Two tablets.
The Ten Commandments.
Sorry. And we have two tablets right here. And you get a standing ovation. Let my people go. Okay. Anyway, that's my sort of novice analysis of Apple. I always liked them, though. Really.
Apple builds more customer-centric products. They're a bit more user-friendly to use, as you can tell with the iPhone and iPad. But at the same time, they don't make as much sense, I guess, today, business-wise.
Yeah.
Pricing-wise and the availability of free software, open-source software, or paid software. There's not as much available for Mac OS.
Good point. You agree, Al?
I agree, yes.
All right. I like the two tablets joke. Okay. Let's take a quick break. And when we come back, I'm going to need two tablets called Advil. And do you guys take Advil?
I do.
You do?
Yeah.
How about you, Al?
Yes, I do.
Occasionally. Yeah, I don't take it much either. But that's my...
They're cheaper than an iPad.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. And, of course, in studio, we have Christian Marison, Technology Talk, and Al Fulton, Breakthrough Networking, NetOne Services. We'll be right back.
At Beerham Baum and Spean PC, we want to help you work on your business, not in your business. We take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs, and if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. Communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. Contact us at 602-266-5633 or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Birnbaum and Spean works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
Ridenour, Hynten & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues, corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Ridenour, Hynten & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today, 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
Hello, I'm Jessica Olson, and I'm here to introduce you to someone whose job it is to stand together with you at the worst of times. Life throws us unexpected curveballs, including losing loved ones, caretaking, troubled retirements, job losses, and legal settlements. Meet certified financial planner Larry Moscat, who pioneered crisis financial counseling. With a background as a clinical psychology practitioner, Larry has helped numerous people see through their crises to a brighter financial future. Larry?
Thank you, Jessica. At our firm, RII Advisors in North Scottsdale, we know terrible times don't usually last, but the effects of anxiety-infused financial decisions can last a lifetime. For 30 years, our prime goal has been to introduce freedom from fear and a feeling of financial security for our clients. We then move forward with safety and best-case outcome results when it comes to the financial decisions made during the worst of times.
To learn more, log on to www.RIIAdvisors.com. That's RIIAdvisors.com for information on how to get help. Once again, that's RIIAdvisors.com for financial counseling during life's most challenging times.
Hi, I'm Paul, and I'm on the spectrum.
And I'm Kim, and I'm an autism specialist.
The second Monday and Tuesday of each month at 3 p.m. on 1010 a.m.
And online at breakradioshow.com, live and archived.
We're here to help you with
Understanding Autism.
And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac, and of course, the fourth Monday of every month. 2 to 3, we got Breakthrough Networking. 3 to 4, we have Technology Talk. Of course, Al Fulton, Breakthrough Networking, NetOne Services, and Christian Marison, Technology Talk in studio. Talk about all this cool stuff. On the break, we were talking about some James Bond type stuff. Pretty amazing. Where do you want to start? Predictions for 2013?
Correct. It's January. We should probably talk about what's coming up and what people are assuming will be the really cool stuff coming out this year. It's not a question anymore of whether it's an iPhone or an Android. Androids are, I guess, more of them, about 50% of the market, while the iPhone is about 30%. Mm. But that's fine. I mean, it's Apple usually has a more concentrated, market. Will Apple's Edge Dual is a question that's been asked for this year. Will their market share has decreased? Their share price has decreased as well. Well, it's not a question about whether it's going to dual, but the market has matured. People have adopted tablets, iPhones, so far and so on. So right. I think it's a matter of just going along with it. It's just a normal product from now on. It's not novel anymore. Also, the death of the QR code. It's also predicted. Oh, that cool black and white code that you can scan with your phone. That depends. And if you remember in our break, we talked about near field communications, NFC. That's a newer concept, I guess, in technology. And what it means, it allows devices to communicate wirelessly with each other. And not just Bluetooth-wise. I mean, I'm talking about making purchases by tapping your phone to a device or your bank card, just tapping it to a door, and it'll just purchase a ticket for you and allow you through the door. NFC is. It's wireless communication between devices. And Samsung Galaxy already has it. The iPhone does not have it yet. But if that comes about and the new iPhone will have it, then we're pretty much talking about the death of the QR code, which is a little bit of a sluggish way to get things going. You have to, get your camera out, open the app, scan it, wait for it. It's a little bit...
And those QR codes were real popular a couple years ago, weren't they?
They just came out like, two, 3 years ago?
Yes.
So kind now, of, already it's bye-bye.
It's
maybe.
It tells you the speed of how things are advancing. And, I mean, we're talking about maybe people putting a lot of money into building apps that scan QR codes, and now they're estimating that it might go away.
Oh, jeez. So I guess you got to be really on your toes if you're going to do anything in technology. Make sure that you're ahead of the curve and make sure that this won't go away anytime soon, right?
True.
Absolutely.
That could be tough. What else you got, Chris?
We'll see more adoption of public free Wi-Fi, and that's actually a thing that I want to mention. I go to some places and I use their free Wi-Fi, and it's absolutely horrible. And that's a message to people out there.
Why is it horrible?
Well, they're probably just not getting the right package, the right speed, the right hardware. I don't know, but some places are fine. I mean, I go to Starbucks all the time, and there's a lot of people there on their Wi-Fi. It seems to work fine. And so I'm not sure exactly what the problem is, but I definitely recommend to businesses out there, upgrade your Wi-Fi connections because, I mean, I eat at places, right? But I also get on the internet, so I want to be able to do that.
Wow. And is that costly, do you think, to upgrade Wi-Fi?
I mean, I'm sure it's not cheap, especially for businesses because they do generate quite a bit of traffic. But at the same time, it brings in your customer, helps them sit down. You can spend their 2-3 hours just being on Facebook. He'll buy food, he'll buy sodas. I mean, and he's going to come back if he can do that. I mean, that's the whole concept behind Starbucks was come here and spend a lot of time.
Yeah, it's interesting because you see Starbucks doing it. Then I notice another restaurant that does it, Applebee's.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I noticed that. And I see more and more now that have free Wi-Fi. And I think you're right. If you don't, it could limit your market somewhat.
You go every day, often you go to a place that you like to spend time at, right?
Wildflower Bread Company.
Would you still go there if they didn't have Wi-Fi?
That would be difficult. I have an air card, which is going to be outdated soon. But that's a big attraction.
Okay.
I have to agree with you. That's a huge attraction. Free Wi-Fi makes a difference.
Okay.
I agree. I noticed the difference in a facility or a restaurant that does not have Wi-Fi, and that the ones that do, they have twice the population or visitors in there.
How about hotels? I wonder if they have free Wi-Fi. Some do.
Some do. A couple that I've visited, the Hilton chain and Marriott's. Yes.
Oh, they do. Okay. Yes. So that's important, too. So everyone's catching on.
Absolutely. And it's a good way to just attract people to your place of business.
Yeah.
It just makes sense to me. A few more things. We should see more privacy laws being passed for apps and social media and stuff along this way. There's been some things in the news lately where apps would track someone's activity without them knowing about it, and they would send it back to the company that built the app in the first place.
Wow.
So we should see more of those. Also, a new type of PC. Now, I don't know if this is going to be for 2013 or not, but they're saying that the PC has been sluggish in sales over the last few years, and they're talking about either someone will come out, whether Microsoft or Apple, with something new or revolutionary, or just they're going to let it die. I want to believe that they're going to reinvent it somehow. I don't know how. Touchscreen technology is already there. I mean, we have laptops that have touchscreen and computers that have touchscreen monitors. I don't know how they're going to do it, but probably thinking about motion technology, changing things with your hands. Xbox already has that at this point. So
Xbox?
We'll see. Correct.
How does that work?
It's well, when you play your video game, it has a sensor that's in front of you, and it's just you. You don't have any controls. And it recognizes your gestures and the way you move. And, you know, if you want to play basketball, you do the exact same motion
like
throwing the ball.
Yeah, I've seen that. Like, I think it's called Wii or something, the Wii game.
The Wii has a controller.
Oh.
But the Microsoft Xbox, I think it's called Xbox Live or something along those lines.
So you could just pretend you're playing, and there you are on the big screen.
Yeah.
Yeah, they have an avatar that you control with your body motion.
That's amazing.
Yes.
Wow, the things that happen.
Now, Dell has, they are condensing the PC into a small, almost like the business technology called thin client. Well, Dell's coming out with a small box that has the same processor. It's solid-state hard drive, upgradable RAM. You can put a video card in it, and it is very small. It's about the size of a napkin, Kleenex box, a couple USB ports. You just hook a mouse, keyboard, and a monitor to it, or a TV, and fully controllable, but the size of just miniature, 3 inches by 4 inches, and about 4 square inches around. So.
It's called the thin client.
Well, business applications use it. It's called a thin client, but they're going to produce a PC for the general public, and it will be just a miniature box without any of the typical CD-ROM. You can't plug things into it other than USB devices.
Wow, very cool stuff.
Two more things I want to mention. These are, I think, are at least I see them as very cool things. Integration between life and technology. Recent technology has shown that you can use your phone to turn on lights, to open your garage, to check on groceries in your fridge, to control your oven. So we should see more of that coming out. And that's really cool because, I mean, you can just sit down and turn on your lights, turn them off. And
your alarms.
You can turn them off
too.
You can turn them off and on from here. Think about playing jokes with someone in your house, like your wife, and just turning everything off.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, see?
There is a company called Smart Home that has those technologies built in for your home, and they've just adopted it to the iPhone, so there's a receiver, and you can control this device that controls all of everything in your home. Just like you were talking about the coffee maker, you set a timer, open and close the garage, everything. What's coming up next is, I'll let you continue, Christian. I don't want to jump ahead.
Well, this is really James Bond stuff. I mean, we talked about it a few minutes ago. It's the Google Glasses. It's a new device from Google that's, they call it augmented reality. And what it means, it's just a quick lens that, you know, they look like glasses, but I guess they don't look that cool yet. And what apparently it's supposed to do is give you information about the things that you're looking at, or give you, you know, Facebook updates of your profile while you're maybe driving, or maybe you're, you know, working or doing other things. And it's just this clear lens in front of your eye that gives you all these cool things. Well, they're talking about perhaps walking into a room full of people, and based on facial recognition software for the augmented reality glasses to recognize someone's face and just pull up their name, pull up their, you know, social profiles, pull maybe their CV, their YouTube profile. I mean, it's just unbelievable, really cool stuff that it could happen, but at this point, we're not really sure what they're going to do in terms of features.
That's cool. Yeah, Al just showed me. He's pulled up. I guess you did a Google search on these glasses. Right?
Yeah, I used a Google search for the Google glasses.
Yeah. And, well, you should have used Bing.
Or Yahoo.
On an iPad to look for Google glasses.
I know. That's why I kind of said it that way. I definitely use Google. And if anyone does that, they can take a look at. They have two different models of the Google glasses. They do list a price here, too.
Oh,
really? They're out already?
It says it will be released this year, but if you want me to, I'll tell you.
Yeah, go ahead.
This is Dave Goldman of money.cnn.com says Google Glasses are $1,500.
Oh, and again, so you could see. So what are you going to see?
Oh, go ahead, Christian.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I mean, the exact features, I'm not exactly sure. They're going to give you updates of your own personal things.
Yeah.
Sure. Whether it's going to use facial recognition to give you updates of other people while you're walking around. That might be something that's going to come in the future. But the concept of having this is just revolutionary. I mean, if we think back a few years, Apple came out with the iPhone, right? They didn't make a phone up to that point. They revolutionized the way we use phones. So is this the product that will do that? That will change the way we live? I don't know, but it's definitely got the possibility to do that.
Well, now, go ahead.
I was going to say the video that I watched regarding the Google phone, they actually showed an individual walking around with them, and the GPS coordinates were in the glasses.
Oh.
And it shows you how many blocks, you know what the street name is. And as you're walking, it shows you as a little dot and your destination. You tell it or program it in, but they just show the address on there and the two. And as you walk, you get closer and closer to the destination, just like a GPS in the glasses. I thought that was awesome.
Think about this. If they could do that, they could certainly at some point have a Google Glass that you could look at someone and they could identify the last phone call they made and a complete profile. Does that sound realistic?
Yeah.
Well, just imagine. The private investigators won't like that because, you know, all you have to do is be a spouse, pop those glasses on and say, I know you talked to, guess what, get the divorce attorney. Or next time, can I go with you? But the thing is like, this is really exciting. It's like everyone's going to have to be honest from now on.
Absolutely.
I think it's a social deal here. It's going to make a difference in the world.
It's a good thing.
No hiding. Yes. Well, it could be a good thing. I mean, if it's in the wrong hands, well.
That's true.
I mean, an IRS agent looking, saying, oh, I just saw you do your picture of doing your tax return. I think you forgot a few things.
Now, you know that at some point they will add a forward-facing camera to the Google Glasses. So it will record everywhere that you go. And so not only will it show you in GPS where the person has been, but it'll show you a video of what they did when they were at the, you know, going to the location and what they did at the location. So,
this is like, you know, beyond invasion of privacy.
Yeah.
And they're going to track everything you do, and we're going to pay for that and wear them voluntarily.
But like FaceTime, that's what it's called on my iPhone? Yeah, I think FaceTime.
Yeah.
You know, it accidentally went on. I go, what's this? I didn't even try it. But just imagine, there's got to be laws with that. I mean, if you can't just go around with FaceTime and, you know, if there's confidential things or things that you don't want to be broadcasted out, that would be, you know,
well, if you're
not
using,
right.
That's true. But if you're using a Google account to share or at least save all of your videos, that's kind of you don't control it. Once it's up there, almost like Facebook, we were talking about that earlier. Once it's up there, you can't retrieve it. It's like permanent.
Really?
Yes, I mean there are some limits, but for the most part, is Google owns it. Part of the disclaimer is anything you post out there, you realize that you don't own it anymore. You know, you can possibly delete it, but if somebody's downloaded it, you can't control. If it goes viral, you can't control who has it, who's downloaded
it.
Yes.
Does that mean YouTube?
Not necessarily. I was referring to like when people share their photos, documents.
Google thing.
Yes, the share.
Oh, the share. I have that.
Yes.
Oh, you mean all that is now not mine?
That's correct.
Oops. The moment you put it on the internet, it's already on some other company's computer, whether it's Dropbox or Facebook. It doesn't matter. So you've already given ownership of that thing to someone else.
Well, let's project forward since we are talking about predictions in 2013 or beyond. Where can this lead? We know what good it can do. It can speed up things. You got instant information. But where could it lead that it might be an issue? And can contradict or in conflict with laws, or maybe new laws will have to be put in, Al.
I have an idea of where that will be an issue is if someone goes to the movie theater and they have the glasses on, and they now record the movie and then bootleg.
Yeah.
So they may make a law that no one can wear Google glasses in, performances, concerts. That's one thought.
So restricted use of glasses.
Correct.
But eventually they'll probably have contact lenses and no one will know you have them.
That's true.
Oh, man, where does this end?
It doesn't. It will have technology everywhere. There's not going to be a limit. I mean, we assume at this point it's going to be safe and secure, but in reality, our lives will change and they will be online. And that's it. We're just going to have to adapt to what we do and how we do it. And, you know, everybody's going to know what political affiliation we have because we might have liked the post on Facebook that was, you know, towards the right or left.
How about Mission Impossible 3? Maybe we should call this Mission Impossible because James Bond, they did have cool stuff. But what Tom Cruise in Mission Impossible 3 with the contact lenses, they were a camera and they can print it.
Oh, yes.
Right away. That was really cool. I bet they're going to have that. That would be, wow. I could see abuse of that and also good stuff on that. But what do you guys see on this?
Oh, yes. It could be abused so easily.
I mean, think about using FaceTime on a public Wi-Fi. Well, that connection is not encrypted because public Wi-Fi networks have no passwords.
Oh.
Some of them don't. So someone could actually hack into that network and view your conversation with somebody else today.
Oh.
And I don't even think it takes that much knowledge to do that. I mean, it's not something that's...
It's beyond me, though.
Actually, I just saw this cool thing in Britain where they have... Actually, I would think we have those in the United States. Passports use RFID, radio frequency ID. And someone sat outside someone's house with a laptop and retrieved information from their passport inside their house.
How did they do that?
Well, it was a government-appointed tester, someone that tests the, you know, the capability of the passport and the security of the system. But they actually broke the system and retrieved personal information from their passport. And that's not an electronic device.
So where is this world going?
Yeah, true. When I receive my passport card, it actually comes in a metal sleeve. That it's printed right on that says to protect from RFID readers. Keep this, you know, your passport in this device. Yes, as same thing with the touch. We were talking about the touch smartphones or proximity. At some point you'll want to put your smartphone in some kind of a sealed case or protection so that you don't get too close to someone else's phone because of the proximity. It can read like credit cards. Not saying the iPhone can, but the RFID readers. If you're within like 3 meters of a person's wallet, they can read your credit card information off of your RFID if you have the newer style that had the RFID and driver's licenses with that as well.
Really?
Yes. Yes.
Oh, man. See, there's a lot of – let's ask this then. Maybe this is a topic for a whole hour show or 2 hours. Is technology going faster than the laws can protect people?
Yes.
Always.
Oh, it does.
Always has been like this.
Oh.
The laws aren't created until someone's done something that it needs to be sued for.
But can't laws be trying to keep up, like get a group of people and say, oh, what could happen? Let's put a law in.
Absolutely.
Could do that, right?
Yeah, they could.
Correct. But usually laws happen only after someone got sued or someone, you know, it's always abuse. Happens backwards. So I think that's not going to change. I think we're going to see, you know, people going forward and then, you know, seeing that things didn't go right. And
I bet they're going to have glasses someday, like the Google glasses or something, that can predict whether a marriage will be successful.
Minority Report.
That was similar, yeah.
Yes.
A crime before it happened, but a marriage before it broke up. Wouldn't that be... Would that stop people from getting married if you put on the glasses and you go, yeah, in 7 years, she will cheat on you with your best friend in your house?
No, they'll get married, and then about 6.5 years, they'll do.
No, you think that would prevent things?
Would you get in a fight with that person 7 years before that, though?
Yeah, you'd say, wait a minute, years, guess what?
You're going to cheat on me.
Wow, what a good movie that would be, huh? Tommy, you like some of this stuff? Really? Wow. No, I'm thinking that things like how would that's going to completely change society.
Yeah, instead of Minority Report, it'll be Divorce Report.
Yeah, or Not Marriage Report, or Happily Ever After. Not okay. Back to Christian.
Well, you said that the world's going to change. Well, let me say this: every day, according to Intel, we create 2.5 quintillion bytes of data.
What's a I can't even say it. Quintillion. What is it?
Well, a trillion is 1,000 billion. So a quintillion is a lot more than that.
Wow. How many zeros is that?
A million billion?
It's a lot. I mean, we're talking about huge numbers. And 90% of the data in the world today has been created in the last 2 years.
Really?
Yeah.
Here's something I thought of. Let me ask you guys, and sort of off topic, but not really. Because everything's going, you know, computerized, obviously, and all this technology, everything's, first of all, number one, does it make traditional military almost obsolete? Two, think about that a little bit. And two, if you had the super hacker, I don't even know what they do because I'm just not very technology savvy, as you both know. But the thing is that at some point, if you have a super hacker, could they actually shut down cities and countries if they're good enough?
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Oh, my gosh, this is terrifying.
Security is actually a huge subject when it comes to technology.
So,
you just don't hear it every day.
But do you see that someday? Like, you know, all of a sudden, you know, a whole country gets shut down.
You're joking, but that just happened last week. Somebody hacked into one of the power stations back east. I don't know what city it was. Caused the power plant to overload, and it burned up something and caused it to shut down. And the whole city was, or parts of that particular city, don't know how many people. But I just read that 1 week ago that somebody hacked in and did that. So security will be an issue, a super program, super hacker.
Oh.
The more connected everything is, the more volatile it is to attack. Because you can attack one system, and if it's connected to another system, it becomes a train effect, right?
So it's going to be who can, you know, take the lead and be ahead of the curve each time, what's going to happen to, in a way, society. Which then leads to my second question. Does it make traditional military obsolete somewhat? Because if you can shut down missile systems, right, and think, you know, I don't even know what I'm saying, but you know what I'm saying.
You're correct.
And then what good is, you know, all these weapons if you could control it? Like there was some talk that the Israelis were able to hack into Iran's nuclear program and install a worm. And someone did it.
Yes.
No, someone did it. We don't know who, but someone did it.
But you got to keep in mind, too, that the military is always 10 to 20 years behind. So the rockets will still be launched manually even 20 years from now. When they're looking for a target, it's not going to be connected to the internet.
Oh.
They're going to have a radio where they call the guy and says, hey, target this jet at you know, and they give them the coordinates, and someone will be there and push the button. It there will still be manual.
I didn't think of that.
Well, what we can do is sell all these countries our operating systems so they use them, and then we know how to hack into their systems.
And disable them.
Make them free, you know, like Android.
Can do that?
Well,
embed certain things in there?
Correct. Well, I mean, the company that created the software probably knows everything about it, doesn't it?
Wow, that's interesting.
Exactly.
So, yeah, like when we buy software, and that's why we have spam protection or whatever it's called, because people can embed and do advertising on our program.
If we get shut down as a radio show, it's probably we debunked the government's strategy to take over the world.
Oh, I see some cars coming towards us. No, I mean, I'm just thinking of it. I'm sure there's going to be a movie about that. Well, there was a movie about that with Bruce Willis. Remember about the hackers? And this hacker was going to shut down like New York or the United States or something.
Die Hard 4?
Oh, was that Die Hard?
I think so. Well, at least.
Well, it might have been one of the. Well, I think it was Bruce Willis. And that was sort of interesting. Mm-hmm. So they had to hire other hackers, the government and the good ones, well, the nice, whatever, to go against the bad ones.
Hackers make a lot of money. Actually, there's a lot of these security conferences where a lot of hackers get hired by big, powerful organizations that hire them to test or make sure that their security is.
What does it take to be? I mean, you have to be really smart, or you have to know just systems. I don't even know what it means to be a hacker.
Programmatically, you have to understand the loops, calls, you know, programming tools that allow you in and out of something or protect something. And once you understand it, you could either make a key to it or you can put up a block. Well, once they understand that, there's only, you know, so many ways you can encrypt something or so many characters, and they just sit there generating all the possible keys in order to break into something. Once they figure it out, then now it's no longer secure. And in Vegas, they have this symposium every year where they have a hackers convention.
Really?
And they make this really, really strong, secure system. And the first company or group of individuals, sometimes just individuals, the first one that breaks it wins something special. And you can Google it on the internet. And it's called, I think it's called the Hackers Convention.
Wow.
In Vegas.
That is amazing. It's scary and interesting at the same time.
Yes.
And back to Christian.
All right. Well, this year, apparently, people are saying that Apple might launch the Apple iTV, which is not the Apple TV they already have. You know, it's a box that you connect to your computer, and it has an interface similar to maybe an iPad. This is called the Apple iTV. And apparently, if you take Apple's sort of history on doing things, right, they invented the iPad, and now the iPad is revolutionary. A lot of people buy it. The iPhone, they did the same thing. The iPod, I mean, they reinvented the MP3 player. If they do this, this could be a game changer in the TV world. Because if you think about it, when did the TV change? I mean, they invented it, what, 60 years ago or so? Has it changed really on how we use it?
No, just the flat screens.
Right. We still use it the same exact way we did back then. There's something
on it.
So
what's an Apple TV? What would that mean?
We don't know yet. But apparently it's going to be something that's going to change the way we use TVs.
Oh, maybe it would connect with all your devices and you can watch anything, anytime, anywhere, any place.
It could be.
Is that you think so?
I was just going to show you to interrupt, but this is the Google video I watched before where they had the GPS. It had just passed, so I just missed showing it to you, but it actually, the person is walking around the city, and he asked for GPS. It pulled up the map, and it showed him where his destination is. He walked by the subway, and it actually updated and said, the subway is closed, and they gave an approximate time, so it's very good. You know, it can be used for good things. So I'll stop interrupting.
I was watching on your iPad.
We'll put that on our website for people to see, a link to that video, or actually maybe on our Facebook page.
Yeah, great idea.
Yes.
Wow, so many things going on. What else you got?
All right. Well, I wanted to remind people that in terms of business, and we're going back to maybe a more serious subject, there are apps that people can use.
Yeah,
to,
I'd like to hear that.
Exactly. There are a billion apps, and some recommendations that I would maybe recommend in terms of business is the following. There's Evernote. If you've heard of it, it's a note-taking sort of project management. It sort of helps you organize yourself and be more organized in terms of when it comes to business. Google Maps came out for iOS.
I got Evernote.
You have Evernote?
I'm not using it yet. I have Notability.
Okay, perfect. Google Maps came out for iOS. Well, a lot of people got in trouble with using the native application for Maps on the iPhone in Australia. They actually called it life-threatening. That came out. TripIt, trip management, reservation, flight arrangements, a really cool little app to organize when you go on a trip. Calling a cab, there's something called Uber. If you're in a city and you need to call a cab.
What's an Uber?
Uber and Snap name.
Oh, Uber.
And you just press a button, and the car comes right to your location. It's based on GPS. It already knows where you're at.
Wow.
There's Workflowy. It's an outliner application. It's a really cool, simple thing to just outline things. MailShot, it's able to create email groups, something that the iOS, the iPhones and iPads don't have at this point. And Glider is one other thing, an ability to use Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, so far and so on, all in one place.
Oh, wow. So there's a lot of great apps.
Really cool things, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Make sure you go for it. And one last gadget that I want to mention, it's the bathroom iPod dock and toilet paper holder is one of the coolest things I think technology has put. It's probably one of the best products for 2013. It's a dock for your toilet paper and iPod at the same place.
And that actually sells.
I'm not sure.
Oh, wow! That is someone thinks of something every second. Evidently,
yes,
no doubt. Wow. So a lot of good stuff today. We talked about applications and Ultrabooks. We talked about how it's really transforming business. And if you're in business, you better have free Wi-Fi or you're going to be way behind the curve. We talked about privacy laws. And some of these James Bond type things, augmented reality.
Let me just say one more thing. Would you like your laptop to have an 80-hour battery?
Yes.
Well, apparently that might come about quite soon.
Oh, wow. This is incredible. We're at the end of the show. I can't believe it. This was fantastic. Al, how do they get in touch with you?
Net1Services.com or 602-989-2334.
And Christian, how do they get in touch with you?
They can call me directly at 602-466-8570.
Wow, this is great. And, of course, next month we'll do this again. We're going to do a lot of technology on the 3 o'clock hour?
Correct. I think we're going to go into the future on our next show. A lot into the future.
With Michael J. Fox, Into the Future. That was Back to the Future, actually. And Al, you're going to have some you always have great guests as well from the 2 to 3 o'clock hour. This has been fantastic. Thank you to Susan Mershon.
Yes.
And to Gelly
Ackenblit.
Exactly. And get out there February 4th, right, Talking Stick, with her signature event. Phenomenal stuff, there's no doubt. I always enjoy going to her event. A lot of people, maybe up to 1,500. But I say more the merrier. That's what I say. This is Breakthrough Thinking. We'll be on again tomorrow with the 5th Tuesday special event. We have Jim Hyten out of Right Now or Hyten and Lewis. We're going to talk about some of the new tax stuff that has come about because of tax law changes, as well as, the fiscal cliff that wasn't. But what's going to happen with the budget? There's still more cliffs ahead. And, of course, Kim Isaac and Dr. Sharon Van Lutz talking about parenting tomorrow from the 3 to 4 o'clock hour, the 5th Tuesday special event on Breakthrough Thinking. Go Coyotes, get down there. The Predators are in town, I think a 7 o'clock start, jobbing.com arena. Guys, thank you.
Thank you.
And we'll see everyone tomorrow.